And a good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chris Grota along with
J.J. Hendricks.
And we're so glad that you have joined us today on Mornings for the Master right here on TGRN. We always want to encourage you to encourage others to tune in to the broadcast and to make use of the wonderful resources that we have right here on TGRN.org. If you would like to promote the radio station in a personal way, we have a plethora of business cards at our disposal that we can get to you. Hand somebody a business card and encourage them to get in touch with God's Word right here on TGRN. You can also promote us on your social media devices, text message, emails, and we encourage that today. We're going to be talking about Genesis chapter 40 today, and we're going to talk about Joseph being in Potiphar's house. It's been discussed the last 3 days, Joseph in Jacob's house, Joseph in Potiphar's house, in the prisoner's house, so to speak, and then in Pharaoh's house. And so that's what we'll be talking about today. But before we get busy with our textual discussion, we have some area-wide events that we'd like to encourage you to look into. What do we got first on the list?
All right, right here, Friday, January 27th to Sunday, January 29th, we have the 18th annual Standing in the Gap Lectureship. That will be in Nesbitt, Mississippi. Speakers include Keith A. Mosher Sr., Don Walker, Chris Butler, Billy Bland, Will Anderson, not Wes Anderson, he is a movie director. Will Anderson is apparently a gospel preacher.
Uh-huh.
Dan Cates and Robert R. Taylor Jr.
Okay, sounds like a good series. Tomorrow is Saturday, the 28th, and that is the day of the annual Give Me the Bible Conference. It is a supporters type of banquet. There are two speakers. Mark Engel is going to be preaching a lesson on Let's Be Keen in 2017. Perry Cowan is going to be preaching a lesson on Let's Be Clean in 2017. So keen and clean.
You know what they need? Chris Grota to do a lesson about studying the Bible. Said, let us glean.
Keen, clean, and gleaned.
That would have been great, but
that, wow. You know, that's a,
I know.
Well, I'm not speaking, but I am going to give a report on the YouTube. Awesome. Did you know that Give Me the Bible TV can be found on YouTube?
I did know that, but I would love for you to tell me more about
now,
that.
Now, here's the problem, and I don't know how to get around this, but there are two Give Me the Bible television programs in the United States of America, and so they have uploaded videos to YouTube. We have our own channel, but in the search engine, it would be helpful if you knew lesson titles or the people that are on the program. So if you were to, let's say, do a search engine on YouTube for Give Me the Bible TV, put TV in there, then you could put the names like Dan Manuel or Chris Grota or
J.J. Hendricks
or, you know, people that have actually been on the program. It would pull up those programs and lead you to the channel.
So my mom is listening this morning. So if you would like to see your baby boy on a TV show, go to YouTube and search Give Me the Bible, J.J. Hendricks, and I should pop up.
Yeah. And, you know, you'd get at least one or two videos, the ones that you've subscribed to.
I've been on four episodes, so okay, it's been more than that.
So this is tomorrow. It all kicks off at 9 a.m. There's going to be a barbecue dinner, $8 a ticket. If you would, call the church building down at the Crocker Road Church of Christ in Palestine, Texas.
It is a great time of fellowship. Last year was a lot of fun. Last year, Chris and Mark Teske spoke. Joe Hancock was there. A lot of really good brothers. And this year, I'm not going to be able to go coaching basketball tomorrow morning. So
you're a coach now.
I'm coach now. So
you're doing something you've always had in your blood.
Yeah, coaching my daughter's basketball team, kind of coaching the league a little bit. But the little girls are sweet, and we're having a good time. Addie is on the Storm, and her team won. Her team won last week. But we're having a good time with that. Stephanie Thomas, one of our members, is helping me coach. And by helping me coach, she's coaching because she knows a lot more basketball drills than I do.
Hey, I tell you what, it's just nice to be, you know, have a team and have camaraderie and have that outreach aspect of it.
And that's what I'm going for. I'm talking to some of the parents more and hoping to be able to reach out with them.
That's wonderful. Thank you for doing that.
No problem. If y'all are in Palestine, though, you'll enjoy it and have a good time. Dan Manuel's going to be there, and Dan's a really neat fella. All right, next thing we have, Saturday, January 28th, that too is tomorrow, is When Life Gives You Lemons. It's a ladies' day. Donna Drain is going to be speaking at that. And if you're going to go, it'd be good. So
where is it?
Corsicana.
Corsicana.
West Hill. So when life gives you lemons, Donna Drain, Corsicana, tomorrow.
Of Corsicana.
Starting at 8:30 in the morning.
Absolutely. All right. And then February 3rd and 4th. Don't want to miss out on the 4th annual Make Me a Servant workshop right here at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ in Mount Vernon, Texas. Rekindling the Fire. Things are going to kick on Friday night, February 3rd at 7 p.m., and we're going to have Michael Light do a lesson called Light the Fire. So Brother Light's going to light the fire. And then Saturday, February 4th, all day, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., really, and then that will go to probably like 4 p.m. or something like that. Anyway, kicks off at 10 a.m. Clay Bond's going to preach on a personal for personal study, kindling the fire for personal study. The next hour, you've got a men, ladies, and youth session, three different sessions. Richard's doing the men's session, rekindling the fire for leaders. Holly's going to do one for the ladies on rekindling the fire of hospitality. Sean Embry, our brother, is going to be here doing the youth deal and rekindling the fire in the furnace. That should be a pretty good a lesson.
And Sean Embry can grow a good beard, too.
You know, that's a good point.
For a guy with lighter hair, he has a pretty thick beard.
Yeah. Okay, we're having meat and potatoes for lunch.
Mm.
All right. That's going to be at 12.
Oh, yeah.
And back by popular demand, we're going to get two different sessions of men's case studies.
And the ladies, that was fun last year.
And then the ladies are going to do the, you know, for sharing the Lord, Carly Bond, of encouragement, Marley Embry. And then the last but not least, John McCormack will wrap things up talking about rekindling the fire for personal evangelism. This is going to be a great weekend. I can't wait to be there. I love it. I come to it every year. And it's just we've got good brethren in this area. And then we get together and we study God's Word together. It is just amazing.
It's a neat program. I imagine it'll be streamed on here too, but there's nothing
that's
like
not
being
the
there
same.
Live.
That's not the same. Yeah, I got to be there.
Not like being here live.
All right.
All right. February the 11th, Carriage Oaks Church of Christ, Bossier City, Louisiana. There will be a teacher workshop with Tia McCorder and April Meacham. Got to spend time with them last week at the a couple weeks ago at the alumni lectures. They brought the Chula Vista bookstore. And
what a neat work they do. Did you know our Bible class system is based off of their deal?
And I saw Cindy put out the sign-up sheet. Apparently, they are going to try to drive a crew out there. So that is pretty exciting.
All right. More information is available by calling the Carriage Oaks Church of Christ at area code 318-741-3016. Again, that number is 318-741-3016 to RSVP or for more information.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then next on our list, we've got the Young Men's Development Conference. Quit You Like Men is the theme from 1 Corinthians 16:13. This will be March 12th through the 19th. This will be a good solid week of it's like a preacher training camp. It's like preaching school for busy people. If you can get away for this week down at the Bryan College Station Church of Christ in College Station, you want to go. And for more information, contact their website at thebcschurchofchrist.com or call them at 979-744-7470. And listen, I don't have time to go into all of the lessons that they're going to be having there. This is a chock full couple of days. If you want a flyer, please let us know here at TGRN, and we will get that out to you.
Right. And last we have, March 26th to March 30th, is the 51st annual MSOP lectureship. The general theme is build your hopes on things eternal. They've got a lot of good speakers. If I were going to go, the names that pop out to me that I would really like to hear, B.J. Clark, Johnny Skaggs, Tom Waycaster, Glenn Colley, Mike Bonner, Brian Gieselbach, Howard Odom, and there's many more. So it will be an exciting thing if you can go and check it out. Paul Sane is up there at the top. But that is
MSOP
lectures.
51st annual, and I've enjoyed going to these throughout the years.
I've never been to one.
I tell you what we ought to do is go over on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, one of these days, And, you know, Thursday might even be good. And just, you know, it's only a 5-hour trip from where we live. We ought to just jet over there and go to it, you know, and then come home. It would be a I bet you we could even find housing while we're there.
But I bet we could.
It's always uplifting to be there. All right. There we are.
That does it for news and notes. If you have anything you would like to have us announce, send that to office@tgrn.org, and that will get to our good brother Ryan Smithy, and
yes,
we'll go to approval from the elders, and then it'll make it on a stack on the desk.
And if you'd like copies of these flyers, if there's something we've said that you'd like more information about, would like to have that flyer emailed to you, you can do the same. You can request the same because we've got that, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So there you have it. Well, okay, let's talk Bible.
Bible.
Joseph, the story of Joseph, takes up a big chunk of Genesis, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it is basically the story, the account, the historical narrative of how and why they were ever needing to be redeemed from Egypt in the first place. I mean, think about it. The Egyptians were there for a purpose. They were there as a convenience. Joseph gets sold into slavery. He winds up living over there. At the end of the Genesis account, we find out that God was behind it somehow for the purpose of saving many people alive. And so God could use their wicked choice to sell their brother into slavery to eventually bless them and help them. Isn't that amazing how our God works? That he can take our stupidity and our sinfulness and use it to bless us later. Now, if it were left up to us, we'd use our sin against ourselves, and we would use it to curse ourselves. But God is a different kind of a thinker, isn't he? Mm-hmm. His ways are different, higher, and more nobler than what we could ever come up with.
Mm-hmm.
So. But so when we pick up the story of Joseph, I'm not talking about the that this is a fictional story. This is an absolute truth. This is a historical narrative.
There you go.
And it is a true story, is how we would say it. And we pick it up in chapter 40 of the Genesis account.
And so Joseph had already been thrown in prison.
Yeah.
Based off of a false accusation from Potiphar's wife, and we see what happens henceforth.
Yeah, he had been a forgotten servant for all practical purposes. And so what happens is that Pharaoh has a dream. And two of Pharaoh's personal staff officers were in prison at the same time. In one night, the two of them had dreams. Now Joseph, and I said Pharaoh had a dream, but these two men who had forgotten Joseph had dreams. Joseph could tell by the look on their faces the very next morning that they were perplexed about something, and so he encouraged them to talk about the dreams that they'd had. And, you know, chapter 40, verses 1 through 8 basically tells us that those dream interpretations belong to God. That's something that he held the key to. Well, the cupbearer, you remember the baker and the cupbearer were the two characters there, unnamed, but the cupbearer related his dream, in which he had seen three grape branches. He'd seen three of them. He saw himself taking the grapes from that vine and squeezing them into Pharaoh's cup. Joseph interprets this dream to mean what?
Three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand and as formerly when you were the cupbearer. Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit.
Okay, so he's still in prison. He's given these dream interpretations, and so in return for this interpretation, Joseph asks that the cupbearer tell Pharaoh. He wants him to remember him and the injustice that's been done unto him. And a lot of that had to do with it goes all the way back to him being carried off out of the Hebrew, out of the land of the Hebrews, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It goes back that far. And you know, he had been carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and then he'd been accused or framed for rape. I mean, you think about it, he's a lot of injustice there. He was a totally innocent man. And so he you know, encouraged by the favorable interpretation given to the cupbearer, then the chief baker related his dream. All right. What was the dream?
I also had a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there was all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. And Joseph answered and said, "This is the interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. In 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. And on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all the servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but
now,
forgot him."
Now, there's a little historical significance here. If you look at commentators, I mean, I'm just relying on commentaries for this historical. So I'm repeating something I've read. But it is my understanding that it was more honorable to be impaled on a stake than to be hung. That hanging was considered to be a dishonorable death in ancient times. And you see examples of this in Deuteronomy 21, Joshua chapter 8, and 2 Samuel 4 and verse number 12. And you consider the links Egypt went to in a quest to preserve the body after death, like mummification, when it says something about the birds will pick your bones clean, or what does it say in the ESV?
Which verse?
In verse number 19.
19, "In 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you."
All right, see, so there was no preservation of his body. This was very disgraceful. And that should tell you something about what Pharaoh thought about him. And I don't know what he did. I don't know why this happened. But this dream foretold of his fate, and so anyway, I think that's interesting that those dreams took place. This kind of proves that God has given him this ability. God is with Joseph at this time; otherwise, he would not have this ability to do this, and so. This is all paving a path for the future. When we get into chapter 41, and really in chapters 41 through chapter 45, there the forgotten Joseph becomes a famous sovereign. He goes from a forgotten servant to a famous sovereign. And these next five chapters contain four units, four breakdowns, which can be labeled unexpected promotion, stressful visitation, skillful investigation, and joyous reconciliation. Of course, we're not going to get that far as the reuniting with his family. But you'll remember in chapter 41, and this is in verses, you know, beginning in verse number 1, that Pharaoh experienced two dreams, which greatly troubled him. In the first dream, verses 1 through 8, would you read that to us?
Sure. "After 2 years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. And behold, there came up out of the Nile seven cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. And behold, seven other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the seven attractive, plump cows, and Pharaoh awoke. And he fell asleep and dreamed a second time, and behold, seven ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on the stalk. And behold, after them sprouted seven ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the seven plump full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So in the morning his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who can interpret them to Pharaoh.
All right. So Pharaoh's confusion and his consternation over his dreams jogged the memory of the cupbearer. And he told Pharaoh about the Hebrew who had interpreted accurately dreams while he was in prison. Let's read verses 9 through 16.
Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, we dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. When we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted us, so it became. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph answered Pharaoh, It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, Behold, in my dream, I was standing on the banks of the Nile. Seven cows, plump and attractive, came up out of the Nile and fed on the reed grass. Seven other cows came up out of the water, or came up after them, poor and very ugly and thin, such as I had never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the thin, ugly cows ate up the first seven plump cows. And when they had eaten them, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were still as ugly as in the beginning. And then I awoke. I also saw in my dream seven ears growing on one stalk, full and good. Seven ears, withered, thin, and blighted by the east wind, sprouted after them, and the thin ears swallowed up the seven good ears. And I told it to the magicians, but they said there was no one who could explain it to me.
All right, so let's just recap for just a second. Now we're going to talk about this dream in just a second, but I want you to think about Joseph, folks. Joseph was how old when he was ripped from his family? About 17 years old.
Yeah.
And then he kind of works his way up. He starts, getting into, working for Potiphar. And then he's accused of rape. And so he's thrown in jail. And just when he thought he had caught a break, about 28 years of age, he interprets this dream, and he's thinking, if the cupbearer will just tell the king about me, then he'll remember me. I guess, being in prison, it's easy to forget about a person.
Mm-hmm.
It is easy to forget about people who are in prison. I want you to understand that. It is easy to forget about people because they're out of sight and out of mind. And you usually associate people who are in jail with having done something wrong. And it's hard to think of anybody that's actually truly innocent being in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there are people there, but everybody says that. So how do you really know? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's easy to forget about people who are in prison. And I think that is probably why Jesus says, reach out to them. I was in prison and you came unto me. That's not a fun place to be. And we certainly know that the people of God in the first century went to jail for teaching the gospel and for lesser things like casting a demon out of a girl with a spirit of divination in Acts chapter 16. And, there were two people there in Philippi, two men that had harnessed that demonic ability to be a soothsayer, a little maiden girl. She's just a young girl with a demon. And you had two men who were exploiting that tormented girl for money. And whenever they cast the demon out and those guys saw that their hope of having any kind of financial gain from that soothsaying girl was gone, Well, they brought him to court, and can you imagine what the court case sounded like? This guy cast out that demon, and now we don't have any business. You know, I mean, like, I can't even imagine what that conversation was. But it was so ridiculous, and they wound up going to jail over it.
Yeah, I don't imagine it went very far.
And how do you think you'd feel if you went to jail? Do you think you could be up in the middle of the night singing prayers? I mean, singing praise songs to God and praying. I mean, I'd like to think that's what I would do in reaction to going to jail for doing something for the Lord. But the other side of me says, you know what? I think I'd be pretty put out. I think I would not be very happy. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you that Joseph was happy. I think he made the best of it. But I mean, it would be like 2 years from the time he interpreted the cupbearer's dream to the time that he interprets the Pharaoh's dream. Can you think about sitting and just kind of just doing your thing in prison for another 2 years? I mean, think about how slowly time goes by when you're just sitting there. Oh, man, I feel for Joseph. I mean, when you really stop and think about the time frames for everything that happened in the story, it's a lot easier just to read the story in a few minutes. But when you stop and think about the time frame that it took for God to do it, I mean, God is obviously not worried about time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we sit there and we think, okay, you know, I'm married, I've got kids. If I had to go to jail for the cause of Christ today and I was going to be in prison for 2 years, no telling what would happen to me in prison, but the fact that I would miss out on my wife and my kids and they're growing. I mean, think about how much they would do in 2 years. Do you know that being, unless my son, Kendall, you know how young he is right now, mm-hmm. unless they came to visit me very, very often, it would be easy. He's still young enough. He could forget me in 2 years if I wasn't around.
Really?
I mean, think about it. He's that young. You know, there are people in the church that my kids haven't been around in a year or two, and they don't remember them. Mm. We had a lady in the congregation, a young lady, a college girl in the church, and she was very good to my kids. She hung out with us a lot, and it was a, you know, but she's married now. She's living her life and doing good. But, you know, we haven't seen her in a long time, and my kids were very young back then. Kendall doesn't remember. Mm. He has no knowledge of her. And all I'm saying is, from a human perspective, when we think about going to be isolated in a jail cell for a unknown period of time, but 2 years especially, think about how much life you're missing out on. Well, that's Joseph. Joseph, who is an instrument for God's grace on a great number of people, is in jail for a purpose of saving his people later on. I mean, would you be willing to be God's tool to save that many people alive just to get food in their belly? Would you go to jail just so that God could lift you up later on and put you in a position of power? If you know that God would put you in a position of power in a foreign country, would you go to jail for 2 years for it?
It's fun to think, yes, but I mean, Joseph didn't have a choice in it.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, and by the way, he didn't even know what his future held.
No, he didn't.
I mean, he could interpret the dreams of others, but I don't guess he interpreted his own dreams.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, I'm just trying to get my mind wrapped around it, and I'm trying to make it real for us this morning. So where are we? Where are we?
Verse 25. Verse 25. 41.
All right, let's keep reading.
Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. The seven lean and ugly cows that come up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty ears blighted by the east wind are also 7 years of famine. It is as I told Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, but after them there will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be unknown in the land by reason of the famine that will follow, for it will be very severe. And the doubting of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the seven plentiful years, and let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. The food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine.
All right, now, did you catch what God was doing in that chapter?
He was helping put Joseph in that position.
Well, and what did, as it pertains to the famine, Joseph say?
It's fixed.
What was fixed?
This is going to happen. Yeah. There's no repenting, no changing that's going to do it. That's not the purpose of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But he said, this is going to happen, so we got to prepare for it.
Yeah. And so the drought, the famine, there was no miracle here. This was all natural law.
Mm-hmm.
And God can work through natural law to accomplish his will. It doesn't have to be against natural law. It's supernatural in the sense that, God thought of it and God is doing something behind the scenes. But when he works in our realm, he does not always use, in fact, we could safely say today that he's not using any kind of what we might call a miracle in the sense of violating a natural law to bring it about. And yet we realize that all natural law is in submission to God and his word. And so if you take the principle from Hebrews that all things are upheld by the word of his power, then you know this. Even the winds and the waves obey his voice.
Peace be still.
And you could say, well, that was a miracle. Well, okay, yeah, okay. He intervened and controlled the laws of nature. I get that. But just keep in mind that he put all this in motion in the beginning. But what I find is amazing, it still amazes me every time, is when the God's word reveals how God is operating behind the scenes. Without the interpretation of this dream, you would not know that God was bringing a famine about. And it was going to go, it was 7 years, that's 14 years. He was going to cause seven of those years to be very fruitful years. But he's placing the responsibility on the people to budget their food. Preserve your food, store your food, use it sparingly, plan ahead, because there is a drought coming. And the drought is going to cause a famine.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't budget for it now, it's just like saving up money. If you don't save your money, then when the rainy day comes, you're not going to be ready for it.
Proper preparation prevents poor performance.
And always avoid alliteration. So, no, I'm just kidding. But so, I want to rewind just a little bit. I want to talk about, so God's providence is seen in this text. God has provided a dream.
Mm-hmm.
He's provided an interpretation. He's provided a plan because he's providing a drought. Mm-hmm. And a famine. And so you see God's providence. Now, when we talk about providence, we're talking about his providence, what God provides. And, it was only by God's providence that Joseph did not spend the rest of his life in prison. After 2 years, Pharaoh has these two dreams. And these dreams disturbed Pharaoh because dreams were considered communication from the gods in ancient times. And if they could not figure out the message, they couldn't figure out what the gods wanted them to do. And so unlike other dreams in Genesis, Pharaoh was not the central figure. This is different.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you look into Daniel, chapter 2, you can see that dreams were a way that God communicated with people, and then he had certain people appointed, like Daniel, was given the gift of dream interpretation. And so it's made clear to Pharaoh that his dream had a wider a national significance, a regional significance, and nobody could interpret that dream except Daniel. I mean, except for Joseph. Nobody could do it. And Pharaoh had summoned his dream interpretation specialist, his magicians, his whoever he appointed to do this, but they could not do it. They were powerless to do it. It was only then that the cupbearer remembered Joseph and his ability to interpret dreams. He says, I'm remembering something here. You remember back when I got thrown in jail for, doing that awful offense? Well, I had a dream, and so did the baker, and Joseph was able to interpret our dreams. Let's bring him up. Now, what did Joseph do before he came before the king, before Pharaoh?
Got to go back.
Yeah. You remember he cleaned up?
Yeah, shaved himself.
Yeah.
And put on clean clothes.
Yeah, he shaved his head and his face. He changed his clothes. And I don't know, about the significance. I don't know if there's any, interpretational significance to this or not. But when do you normally hear of a Hebrew shaving his head?
Morning.
it's rare. Okay. What does Leviticus 14:9 say? Can you turn over there? Or maybe, I'll tell you what, I've got it here. I'll do that. Leviticus 14:9.
I'm already there.
Okay, tell me what that says.
Leviticus chapter 14 and verse 9 states, "And on the seventh day he shall shave off all his hair and his head, his beard and his eyebrows. He shall shave all of his hair, and then he shall wash his clothes and bathe his body in water, and he shall be clean."
Okay, now who does this? Is this a leper?
Priest, and the priest shall command them to kill. He shall take the bird.
Yeah, but this is the law of the leper, right?
Yeah.
All right. As far as I know, in Levitical law, the only people that shave their heads are lepers. I've never heard of it anybody else.
I thought they shaved their head if they were in mourning.
I don't know. I mean, if you,
not sure.
I'm open to this, discussion. I'm throwing it out there, but I know for a fact that they did it for lepers.
See, I was under the assumption when I read this that it was just to make him presentable before Pharaoh. It didn't have any other ramifications to it because, remember, the Leviticus is the law of Moses, and that hadn't come yet. So I assumed that Pharaoh didn't want to see somebody with a great big woolly beard and unkempt hair, and they just said, shave it all off, and here's clean clothes. I imagine they weren't giving him clean clothes in prison. I didn't think any further about it.
Well, I know that Job 1:20 shaved his head.
Yeah, but that was mourning.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean,
and he fell down on the ground and worshipped.
That's why I wondered if it was a law of the patriarchs type thing. So I don't know. We'll ask him one day.
Well, and usually cleaning up for a Hebrew did not normally include shaving heads.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're just talking about cleaning up, you see what I'm saying?
Well, no, I'm not saying he did that. I think what I gathered was it was inferred from this is that they'd said, you're going to meet Pharaoh, you had better clean up. That's what I thought.
Right, yeah.
It wasn't on his own volition. It was...
Well, right. But what I'm saying is in a Jewish mentality, a Jewish mind would not have... And maybe the tradition hadn't been established long enough for him to even think this way, but maybe I'm putting history all together, but if a typical Jew was going to clean up, would they normally think of shaving their head unless they were mourning?
I don't know.
See, that's what I'm saying. It seems to be, that there's taking an extra step here.
Because remember, by the time Leviticus comes around, Joseph's already been gone for, 1,000 years?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so it could have been just the culture of Egypt to do that.
That's what I was thinking is traditionally despots don't like to look at unpretty things. And you've got Pharaoh sitting on his throne, and they're like, all right, he's called you up, so you better clean this mess up.
Well, so it's probably safe to say that this was an Egyptian concept.
Yeah.
All right, so he was, this was an Egyptian custom. Okay.
That's what I would guess. I mean, I didn't look any deeper into it.
Well, so, how would that And of course, you know, we don't know what the time frame is between now and the time that he's reunited with his brothers or sisters, but had they walked in, they wouldn't have recognized him.
No. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. I imagine that being all shaved up and cleaned up, I mean, at 17, if he had a beard, it might not have been a real good one. I don't know. There's some people grow facial hair younger than others, but still, remember, we're looking at all these years later, half a lifetime later, and when they see him, and I mean, that's pretty easy to not. And plus, they thought he was dead. Remember?
Right.
So
now let's also think about something else. This is another dynamic that I want to throw into the thing here. Remember that Moses is telling the story. Genesis is the first book of Moses. It was given to the people of Israel. Unless they had an oral tradition about Joseph, I'm going to venture to say that they had not heard the half of what Moses was telling them about Joseph.
Mm.
So they're getting their memory refreshed on their history of from the beginning of the world to how we got here today.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, why are we even in Egypt? Why are we having to come out of Egypt? Well, how do we even get into Egypt? Well, this was the story of how we got there. And so, you know, when you think about the status of the people of Israel, the Jews, when Moses goes in to get them, are they overly spiritual?
No.
No. I mean, When Moses leaves to go get the law, I mean, he's brought them up out of land. I mean, and by the way, Moses begins his ministry with them, and they're already balking and complaining, but even before the 10 plagues are done, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Even before they're going to cross the Red Sea, I mean, they're like squeamish about this deal. So they finally get on the other side. He goes up to Sinai, into the mountain. He comes back down. He finds what?
Golden calf.
Golden calf. Where did they get that idea?
Like an Egyptian, where they grew
up.
That's
what I'm saying. So when Moses finally tells them the story of Genesis, I don't know when that comes along in their history, but when they finally get this teaching and they hear about Joseph and his dream interpretation coming from the one and true and living God, it absolutely puts the gods of the people to shame.
Moses could take the people out of Egypt, but he couldn't take Egypt out of the people.
Right. But I mean, but you're teaching these people and you're saying, okay, look, there's only one God, and that one God had to introduce himself to Moses at the burning bush.
Mm-hmm.
So even he was kind of not acquainted as he should have been. But we know that those people were steeped and educated in the gods of the people. And what Jehovah did for Joseph is something unlike what the false gods, imaginary gods, had done for any of the people ever. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Not that they really do anything, but, you know, it's all a perception in people's minds.
Right.
And so, you know, this is setting it all apart. Here's the real from the fake. And so, you know, even Pharaoh comes to respect Joseph and respect his God because of this actual power and actual truth that's coming from there. So, I just like to think about the context of this information as it's revealed to people. You know, Moses and Aaron exposed Pharaoh's magicians in Exodus chapter 8.
Mm-hmm.
What does Exodus chapter 8, 18 and 19 say?
Pretty much it. I mean, I guess I can turn there.
Here, I'll get it. Here, I got it. Exodus chapter 8.
But I remember they got to the point that they were like, yeah, we can't even match this.
You remember in verse number 17, it says, this is the plagues. You know, Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod to smote the dust of the earth, and it became lice in man and in beast. And us all the dust of the land became lice throughout all the land of Egypt. And the magicians did so with their enchantments to bring forth lice, but they could not. They tried, but they could not. So there were lice upon man and beast. Then the magician said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." And Pharaoh's heart was hard. Now this was a different Pharaoh than what Joseph knew. But I'm just simply saying that the nature of the magicians in Egypt had not changed at this point. They're mm-hmm. still false, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So when Joseph appeared before Pharaoh expressed his belief that Joseph was one of these magicians capable of special powers. And so in chapter 41, verse 15, what does it say?
Chapter 41, starting in, or looking at verse 15, we see, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have just heard it as said that you, when you hear a dream, you can interpret it.
And so what did he respond? He responds in verse number 16. He says, no, it's not me.
It's God.
It's God. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer.
Shows a lot of humble spirit.
Well, that's it. And absolutely. And I think that the idea is that he's giving God the glory, mm-hmm. and he's causing him to think, hey, you know what? The power is not in me. I'm not like these magicians. This is a God thing, okay? And so in ancient Egypt, you realize that Pharaoh considered to be himself a god. Mm-hmm. I mean, pharaohs did that. They thought they were gods because they and in a worldly sense, yes, but not God. All right. So Joseph's response wasn't exactly one of those responses that would incur favor.
Right.
All right. It's not like that. It's not like he's winning friends and influencing people here. He's saying something that would be very contrary to his belief system, to Pharaoh's belief system. And in ancient Egypt, we know that they believed in a lot of gods. And he's not saying anything about those other gods. He's making a reference to God as the only one and true and living God. Like there is no other.
Yeah. Well, let's look at verse 37. We see almost a switch flipped. Flip switch, whatever. Kind of like when the people were worshiping their own gods, and then they threw Jonah overboard.
Yeah.
And then they worshiped God. So Jonah's behavior caused them to believe in God. And here we see verse 37. This proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him ride in his second chariot, and they called out before him, "Bow the knee." Thus he set over him all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent no one shall lift up hand or foot in the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zephanath-Paneah. And he gave him in marriage Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. Joseph was 39 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. During the 7 plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly. And he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which occurred in the land of Egypt and put the food in the cities. He put in every city the food from the fields around it. And Joseph stored up grain in great abundance like the sand of the sea until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. And before the year of famine came, 2 sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, "God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house." The name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. The 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said. There was famine in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all Egyptians, "Go to Joseph, what he says, you do." So when the famine had spread all over the land, Joseph opened the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth.
All right, so let's go back just a little bit. Let's talk about the things that were given to Joseph. in his exalted position. I counted four things. You said there was a signet ring.
Signet ring, which is a big deal. I mean, any letter that went out, signet ring.
Basically, he could do business in the name of Pharaoh, right?
Yep.
I mean, he's got his authority, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's big. He finally got his break, right?
Right.
And so just because God, used him, and through him interpreted a dream, so God is also lifting him up to this exalted position. It's not anything he did, right? It's all something that God had done. So he's got the ring. What about the clothes? What kind of clothes was he wearing?
Fine linen. He was also given a gold chain.
Gold chain.
Mr. T starter kit.
And don't forget the chariot. I mean, think of it as a limousine today.
Mm-hmm.
And probably like a parade, a motorcade or something. He's got a status. He's a very important man in Egypt. And this just goes to show you the trust that he had. And so he was, very much in charge. And I don't know what Pharaoh was doing, and letting him do all the work. Maybe was he like vice president to the president or something?
I don't know.
Anyway, we see that God brings this up. He raises up kings. He takes them out. He also raises up king's assistants. And,
mm-hmm.
and you see out throughout the Old Testament, there were different times, like in Esther. You see this in Daniel especially. It's amazing to me to know that God could use his people in foreign leadership positions, raising mm-hmm. them up. And every one of them went through some period of trial to get there. It's like there's no way of climbing that ladder unless you start off with suffering somehow. And I don't know. It's an interesting pattern to look at. What else can we say about this? You made a mention a moment ago about Joseph's children. What are their names?
Ephraim and Manasseh.
The tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh.
You know,
a lot of people think about the 12 tribes of Israel, and they think, well, Joseph was one of the kids. How come there's not a tribe of Joseph?
Because Reuben didn't get a tribe.
Well, Joseph's not named after, the two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh.
So they split those two and took away. It was Reuben that was taken away, right? Yeah, there's no tribe of Reuben.
Yeah, no.
So.
I thought there was.
Reuben was who didn't get a tribe?
Man, I tell you what, I should have studied that out before.
I didn't think we'd talk about it. So,
and of course, the half tribe of Manasseh, half of them were on one side, half of them were on the other.
Right.
I'm remembering that. But one thing had always been a question in my mind is why wasn't Joseph represented in the 12 tribes? And so. You've got this as being the reason, because it really wasn't about him. It was his children that became tribes. So that tells you how fruitful Joseph's bunch was. If they by the time they go into the promised land, they've got a whole tribe to themselves, that's not bad. All right, you're looking that up. You're looking that other answer. Man, it's got you on that.
It does.
We got to figure that out now. What tribe was not mentioned? I know we were studying Revelation not long ago, and there were some tribes that were left out there. And Joseph is mentioned there, by the way. But all right, so we've got this Joseph is put into this position, and we know that this is really the pericope that we've got for today. It's the limit of what it means to be in Pharaoh's house. But I think about how Joseph miraculously knew the information that the apostles, in the same way knew the languages that they spoke at Pentecost. It was divine revelation, and so God is able to give us, what we need to accomplish His will. And I know that we're not dealing in the miraculous today. But I would like to think about the fact that Joseph was kind of like Job. He was willing to just do what was right and fulfill his role. Remember, think about the fact when he was accused of rape, And he went back to prison again. You know, he said, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Now, that was his heart. He would not sin.
I think I figured it out.
All right, tell us.
Is Levi didn't get a land allotment, so they split Joseph.
That's what it was.
They split it to Manasseh and Ephraim, so there were still 12 land allotments. Yeah. Levi and Reuben did have land. Reuben was east of the. You're right. Was east of the Jordan.
Yeah. All right. So we've got just a few seconds left. Give us a talking point. Tell us what is the one thing that really stands out. What is the message that speaks to you? What do you glean from this today?
What I glean from this today is, no matter what circumstance you're in, always look to God.
And that God will provide.
God will provide.
We're looking at God's providence today. Mm-hmm. Listen, thank you so much, everybody, for being with us today. We look forward to having you on the radio again next week, next Monday, for Mornings for the Master. Until then, I'm Chris Grote, along with
J.J. Hendricks.
And remember,
we are proud of you.
God bless.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.